Law Focus Podcast. Law Focus on Bafang 88.1 Point of Information.
Good evening and welcome back to Law Focus right here on Vow FM 88.1. It's exactly 1 minute past seven. My name is Sub Mohapi and I'm going to be your host for this evening. It's going to be yet another hour of interesting and insightful radio tonight. And we thank you again for joining us this evening. If you're joining us for the very first time, thank you for taking a chance and listening to us tonight. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And to our regular listeners, welcome back to yet another insightful and informative episode of The Law Focus. So this show, what we try to do is to bring you the most relevant and interesting legally related topics that we have. And every Tuesday, it's between 7 and 8 o'clock in the evening. And we go quite in depth into the legal topics by having conversations with guests. Often those guests would be experts or people with experience within that that part of the law, even if they're not lawyers themselves. Before we start the show, I wanted to highlight perhaps one of the more interesting things that happened this week, and that was the absolute egg on our face. We'll get back to it a bit later, but the absolute egg that has been left on the South African collective face by the escape of the self-proclaimed Prophet Shepherd Bushiri and his wife Mary. He went so far as to make a few quite bold statements and demands on his social media account as if to negotiate with the Republic's government. And what's really appalling is that he's a fugitive and he's an accused criminal. He hasn't been convicted of anything yet. And he would like to set up the terms on which he's going to return. He escaped while on bail, but we'll have to watch and follow. We'll get back to that story a little bit later. But it is a very interesting one, and one that is making South Africans ask themselves all sorts of questions. Right, we're going to be talking tonight about the decriminalization, potentially, of sex work. It can be an emotive topic because of the moral, legal, social, whatever implications. But let's unpack all of them and see how this can work, if it can work, why it should work, or why it shouldn't work. But if you want to join the conversation, you can call us now on 011-717-9881. You can also reach us on the various social media platforms where you can be part of the show and engage with us. We really like your engagement. So we're available on Twitter, and it's at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. On Facebook, we are VowFM. And for podcasts, you can visit vits.journalism.co.za/law or the Vits Radio Academy page on Iono. We're also available on Spotify if that's your preferred method of listening. Now, let's start with the first feature of the show, one of my favorite features of the show, and that's the legal hotspot. Let's have a look at the hottest legal stories of the week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots.
Yeah, we come up here to Parktown just across the road, basically, and we're looking at the state inquiry, or the Commission of Inquiry, sorry, into state capture. The Deputy Chief Justice, Raymond Zondo, said he would deliver his much-awaited judgment on whether he should recuse himself, and he's only going to deliver that on Wednesday. This according to eyewitness news. Yesterday, the commission heard arguments from the legal representative of former President Jacob Zuma, and the evidence inquirer, the inquiry's evidence leader, who is Advocate Paul Pistorius as well. What Zuma claimed was that there was that Zondo was insensitive, and he and Zuma believed that Zondo had made up his mind about the former president and had cast aspersions on him, that he was unsympathetic as well. And Zondo said he would consider the arguments overnight and was supposed to deliver his judgment today, but has rolled it over until tomorrow. So we'll hear tomorrow whether the Deputy Chief Justice feels that he should recuse himself or not. Just as a point of interest, though, over 200 witnesses have testified in the state capture inquiry. It's been running for, I think, roughly 2 years now. It only has around 6 months left of its mandate, or even less, 4 months left in its mandate. And three of those months, I believe, are scheduled for actual drafting and not hearing of evidence. So this application by the former President Jacob Zuma could have very serious implications for the inquiry itself. It has the potential of collapsing the entire inquiry. I didn't personally hear anything which would make me believe that the recusal is justified. But hey, I'm only a member of the public. I don't know. Let's hear what happens tomorrow. Going back to Bushiri now and his escape from the Republic. Now, he was granted bail, as we reported, I think it was last week or perhaps a little the week before that, granted bail under very strict conditions. Him and his wife had bail of, I think, around 400,000 rand combined. Very strict conditions of reporting to the nearest police station every day. And they're meant to appear in court again on the 19th of November, which is, I think, 2 days from now. Anyway, what has happened is that they have escaped at some point during the course of last week and miraculously emerged in Malawi. Now, members of parliament today said they wanted to seek video footage from the Waterkloof Air Force Base, and because they're looking for answers on how Bushiri and his wife fled the country. They're charged with, that is now Bushiri and his wife, are charged with theft, money laundering and fraud. And this is in the amount of in excess of 100,000 rand. Sorry, 100 million rand. They were granted bail last week, as I said before, but they left the country. This is despite the fact that Bushiri had 5 passports. Bushiri also had an odd, irregular residency within the Republic, and he appeared. Nobody knows how he got there, which is a crying shame. Eyewitness News has reported that the Minister of Home Affairs, Aaron Motsoaledi, he was facing questions in Parliament about how Bushiri left the country undetected. And he stated that no ports of entry or exit detected Bushiri's exit from the Republic. He also refuted claims that Bushiri fled on board the Malawian President Lazarus Chikwera's. Sorry, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Chikwera's plane from Waterkloof. It seems as though MPs are not convinced by this. I don't know why they wouldn't be, but it seems that they're not convinced. And the committee chairperson, Bongani Mbonga, has called for security footage to be looked at as part of the investigation. Motsoaledi told the committee's governing, government security cluster, that they're going to do an in-depth investigation and report back to South Africa. You will recall that the state itself had, in fact, opposed bail on the basis that Bushiri, among other things, was a flight risk. Home Affairs also mentioned that he was flight risk, owning 5 passports, having access to massive amounts of wealth. All sorts of things were alleged, but he was eventually granted bail, and the result is that he has now fled the Republic. I suppose Interpol will be involved soon, and on the 19th, I assume that a warrant of arrest will be issued against him. Yeah, it's very, very, very disheartening stuff to think about how many people have escaped justice in this country. But those are legal hotspots, our hottest legal stories of the week.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Just a reminder that this week is dedicated to people living with disabilities. Don't forget about that. And please, please support the initiatives that are going on this week. Welcome back to Law Focus, all of you. Our frequency is 88.1, just so you can remember that. And you can also listen to us online by streaming us on vowfm.co.za. It's 7:10 now. And as I've already mentioned, tonight's topic, we're going to be discussing the criminalization or decriminalization of sex work. Prostitution in South Africa is illegal, and that's for both the buyer and the seller, as well as things like keeping a brothel, pimping and selling sex has been illegal in the country since the early 1900s. Now, buying of sex, interestingly, has only really been illegal in the 21st century. But selling of sex has been illegal for well in excess of 100 years. Now, South African law also prohibits other aspects of sex work. Now, this would include owning a brothel, living off the earnings of prostitution, and enticing a person into prostitution. Naturally, the Criminalization of sex work has not deterred people from selling sex to make a living. And the criminalization of sex work has arguably made sex less safe. Sex work has existed probably since the dawn of time and will continue in some fashion probably until mankind is no longer here. The question is whether we regulate it or we don't. We criminalize it or we decriminalize it. To get a little bit more insight on this question, we'll be speaking to Katlego Rasebete, and they're from Sisonke Gender Justice. And we'll be talking about why they believe that sex work should be decriminalized in South Africa. Good evening, Katlego. Welcome to Law Focus.
Good morning, good evening, sir. Thanks for having me on your show.
Excellent. Now, for those of us who don't know exactly what role Sisonke plays, could you explain what it is you do?
So I'm just for a point of correction, I'm from Sisonke, the National Sex Workers Movement, not Sisonke Gender Justice.
Oh.
So what we do is, as the movement in South Africa, we advocating for the rights of people to do basic access to the basic like rights, you know, like the right to trade, the right to ownership. And we're not only advocating for that. We are making sure that if an adult is consenting, they should be given the right to do anything they want with their body. Mm. Even if it means the person wants to do 1,000 tattoos on their bodies. If it's an adult, they're consenting, they must be given a right. We should stop using state powers like the police, for example, state agents like the police, you know, to control people around their own bodies, which is what we're advocating for. And not only advocate for, we're specifically advocating for the law reform around sex work.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, since up to the colonial era, since 1967, that's when you find sex work was first criminalized.
Mm.
And not only sex work was criminalized in 1967, also things like the LGBTI people were criminalized, you know, the thing. Also, like, when a race, when a white man wants to marry a black woman or a black woman wants to marry a white man, those things were criminalized. And it goes as far as also controlling people's movements. But all of these above colonizers laws were either legalized or were decriminalized, some of them. But sex work still remain outstanding because of, I feel the state still feel like, you know, because of it's a dirty taboo, and, you know, when you're black, you know, these are not some of the conversation that black people want to engage into.
Mm. Now, but I understand that part of your organization's work is to advocate for sex work as human rights. Can you elaborate this for us?
So when you look into the National Strategic Plan, which is a goal 5 of the National Strategic Plan, it speaks around the human rights.
Mm.
So by allowing sex work to be decriminalized, it's also respecting people's choices. Remember, the Constitution also gives you a right to choose, a right to trade, a right also to say, you know, to for association, a right for other things that I can mention, which is the list of rights. Then what we do is, we want people who are adults who enter the sex industry to be protected, because right now the state doesn't protect them.
Mm.
For example, not only sex workers, the seller is criminalized. Also, the buyer of sex is criminalized. Owning a brothel is criminalized. You know, benefiting from the sex money, you are being criminalized by the Sexual Offences Act because you benefited from an act that is legal, criminalized in the country. So all of the above people that I just mentioned are also, like, according to the Sexual Offences Act, are criminalized. For example, if you were to know a sex work, and the police, let's say the Hawks, are investigating you, and you never mention to the Hawks that this particular individual does sex work, you will be arrested because you are carrying information that the state needs.
Mm. Mm.
And by decriminalizing sex workers are going to have the right to justice, because we are all aware that, according to the latest research that was done by NACOSA, the police are no longer harassing sex workers that much because of they are now being sensitized, being taken into workshop. They understand the difference between prostitution and sex work.
There's a difference between the two?
Prostitution and sex work. So if you look into the first national strategic plan for sex workers nationally, sex workers adopted to say one of the pillars that they would request is to be called by their profession. They felt like the word prostitution is a very demeaning biblical word, you know, that makes a person inferior. But if you call sex workers by their profession, they are more, you know, in a space of their life, they can say, finally, South Africa. Remember, in the whole of Africa, we are the only country that has adopted the word sex work into the government document.
Right.
Ever since 2016, no other government document that speaks about the word prostitution. I understand that private sectors, like maybe your vet, RHI, radio, you might be still using the word prostitutes.
Yes.
But according to the NSP 2016-2019 of the word prostitution doesn't even appear once into the document.
Mm.
And ever since 2016, no government, even in the agenda of any government institution that they want to discuss sex work, they write it as Boulder City sex workers. So that's why we went as far as forming sectors that will sit within the AIDS Council meetings, because we felt like for us to end the AIDS, as the Universal Health Coverage said, by 2030, the whole world must end, HIV must end. By leaving sex workers behind into this discussion around HIV, STI, prevention, and all of that, and treatment, then we won't even reach the 1990 strategy that the world is all looking up to as a goal for 2030.
Right. Okay. I see. Well, it's quite an interesting development that the terminology has changed due to the negative connotations of some of the words that we used. But one of the things perhaps I'd like to ask you about is when we talk about consenting. You know, do we have a great deal of that? I've never gone to a school where anybody's put up their hand and they say, you ask them what you want to be when you're a child, when you're an adult, and they go, "Oh, I want to be a doctor, a teacher, whatever the case may. I want to be a builder, a plumber, whatever." I've never come across anybody who says, "Well, I'd like to be a sex worker." Now, the reason that I say that is because the reason I ask that is because, is it really something that people are consenting to, or is it something that they are forced into through circumstances or through illegal activities such as human traffickers, and therefore there is that issue of, but is this thing really, or is sex work really consensual? Is it something that we should simply allow? That's one of the big questions.
Yeah. So what now we need to do as the country is to approach MEDLEG. And the sex work is not registered globally as part of an employment role. Like people can say, I do work as a sex worker. So we need to approach MEDLEG so that sex work must be registered under occupational health therapy. Then we're moving forward as a country. And therefore, I hear you when you mention issues around human trafficking, people being forced into do sex work. Remember the definition of the South African context. I'm not quoting globally. South African definition for sex work. Sex workers are adults who are consenting, offering sexual services for a transaction. Meaning there must be an agreement between two adults who are engaging in the act.
Now, given that we live really in a conservative, relatively conservative country, although our legal system might be progressive, many of our citizens are quite conservative. Do you think that the legal system will acknowledge and recognize or legitimize, decriminalize, let me put it like that, sex work?
Remember, when abortion was introduced in the country, there was the hoo-ha that happened all over the country that, like everybody was angry. And when the LGBTI also was introduced in the country, most people are saying, oh my God, oh now, we're going to run out of men. But we have clearly not even run out of men. There's still enough men for everybody in the country. So sometimes people, they are, I'll tell you, they would fear the unknown. For the fact that sex has not been criminalized, we don't know, what is the fear around all of this that makes people to say, but if sex work is to be criminalized, then there's going to be lots of human trafficking, there's going to be child trafficking, and all of this other negative energy that people are throwing into it. I remember at some point I said with the Premier of Gauteng to say, Mr. Premier, Gauteng is the motherland of the whole South Africa, it's the city of God. Can't you therefore, in our Gauteng eight council plans, decriminalize sex work into Gauteng as a pilot project, then review and monitor what will happen before we can launch the whole national decriminalization of sex work? And this was that's the conversation that we are having. But I'm glad that organizations that coordinate all of this, like your South African National Aid Council, they support fully the conversation of sex work. You have seen politicians during the... I know we are going as the country into election sooner. You see politicians also throwing that the conversation of sex work needs to happen now. Lots of political parties, they even said it's one of their declarations from way back in the years that decriminalization of sex work is the way to go. Because decriminalization of sex work, it will give especially a black female her voice back. Because you could never, ever see in the media when they do find about sex workers, they would put Indians, white or other. But our media in South Africa, they are feeding us that a black female is always a sex worker. That's why the police, they would rather arrest a black female and leave a white one, because of that's what the media is teaching people every day, that a mahosha is a black female.
I suppose it's also because they're perhaps more accessible as well, because they're on the street.
Black female, when we're not given opportunities like other men in South Africa, they were not given opportunities to them. That's why you find a lot of black female South African are engaged in the sex industry, because it's their last hope. These are mothers, these are aunties, the dad has run away. 350, that government grant, it's not even enough for the child for a month or to pay their rental. So most of you find lots of black men that are entering the industry because of it's their last call to life.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We live in a country which is very different from what it was 30 years ago at the dawn of democracy, 50 years ago, or even, 80 years ago when apartheid was in full swing. And it's true that perhaps there are some things that we should begin to look at a little bit more closely. We aren't what we were 30 years ago. So today what we are discussing, if you've just joined us, is sex work and its decriminalization. It's still a crime in South Africa to buy and sell sex, both for the buyer and for the seller. Now, we're talking to Katleho, and he's from Sisonke, and they assist with advocating for sex work and sex workers and their rights. It's now just gone 25 past 7. Katleho, how is the industry presently regulated? If it's, are there any regulations? Let's put it like that, actually, firstly.
Currently, there's not any regulation around the industry because of criminalization has kept sex work underground. That's the fact. And as Sisonke, we have also looked into ways that if decriminalization were to take place, how are we going to regulate? I remember when we did a learning and exchange in Amsterdam, we were not quite happy with the model to legalize sex work in South Africa. We were like, you have your red light district, because of we felt like we cannot, group people into one city and say, only in this city that's when you can do sex work. Which it's quite happening well for them in overseas. But we felt like by totally decriminalizing sex work, it will give the owner of the brothel the right. They will stop being police cash cows, because we know a lot of owners of the brothels, they are cash cows to the police. And it will give herself her voice back. Because of, like for example, we know that because of the demand of sex in the country, that's why we have lots of men. Because sex work, they do not only give penetration services. Sometimes some of these clients, they just want to speak. Some of them, they just want to, do other sexual activities that they cannot even find in the house because of morality aspect, of certain beliefs that, you can't do this, you can't do this as a married couple. So some of these men, they go out there to explore other sexual activities.
Yeah. If you can't find it at home, I suppose sometimes you would have to go out and find it somewhere else. That's in the mind of perhaps the buyer. Now, I would imagine that sex work can be dangerous because you often have a single woman who is making a transaction with, a potential buyer. It's done at night in a private area. Nobody can see anything. Now, that could be dangerous work, particularly for the sex worker herself. Do you think vulnerable to all sorts of things at the hands of someone perhaps who is not quite right in the head? Do you think that once sex work is decriminalized, that it will assist in reducing the danger for sex workers?
It will. It will definitely. What I like about decriminalization will come with a package to say 18 and above. Meaning, like, even us as the movement that is advocating for sexual rights, we're going to have to intervene if there's a child that is being exploited. Remember, an underage cannot engage in sex working, but it's been an exploitation, regardless of how people see as it, but we feel like if an adult wants it's paying sex to a child, it's an exploitation on its own. These are some of the plans that we already have in place to say, once the conversation takes place, we are going to have interventions. People will be arrested for such behavior. And then also we will make sure that, sex workers are well protected, because we are going to have ambassadors all over. And those ambassadors will come from sex workers themselves to say, if somebody stops, take the number plate of your friend, But sex workers will be done in a more professional way, whether like sex workers are now, they wouldn't even want to hide. Because, believe me, whether you want it or not, for a sex worker even to hire a hotel, they must hide that I'm doing sex work. Hotels, they will open because they know now, no legal activities now, everything is being decriminalized. They will just walk in into a hotel to say, hi, I'm just here to book my client, I'm doing sex work. No worry. But now sex workers, they have to go to places under the trees, all over the show, because of even the safest place, they do not even accommodate them. So these are some of the conversations that we need to take further and, try to stretch them, because of, like for example, let me tell you this. The LGBTI buying power in the country at 1 billion rand. So there's not enough research that has been done to say how much buying power that sex workers carry in the country. Because of nobody wants to invest in something that is criminalized.
That's an interesting take. Sure. Sex work and its implications. Should we criminalize? Should we decriminalize it? Should we destigmatize it as well? Because there is perhaps a measure of stigma attached to it. We're going to move on to that a little bit later. If you're from outside the province, you can still listen to us by streaming us live on vowfm.co.za. And now for those of you who've only just joined us today, we're talking with Katlego Rasibetse, and we're discussing the decriminalization of sex work. It's 29 minutes past 7, and we're bringing this interview a little bit to a close, but it's been a very, very fascinating one. Now, what is your message to lawmakers regarding the decriminalization of sex work?
My message, Minister John Jeffrey, should stop playing a gatekeeper. Because I believe he's delaying the process of decriminalization of sex work because of his holding of a more moral aspect, and he doesn't believe it. Because at some point, he even mentioned that he doesn't appetite the voters of the country. So, and for the fact that it's a white privileged man who's holding the whole process, he needs to sign the documents. Now, when I'm saying the documents, I'm talking about the National Strategic Plan, which is 2019-2022. And he hasn't yet, because even if we're talking people that are criminalized, and this delaying tactics that the politicians are doing, but they're only going to mention sex work when they won their vote, it's quite embarrassing. It needs to stop. If you don't on its own, if you look into the SANAC estimation, we are sitting at 158,000. That was 3 years ago. And now we are sitting at 288,000 sex workers in the country, which is like almost like a seat in parliament.
Well, that is so a huge number. And it's something. It's one that can't be ignored.
If you want a seat in parliament, we can call all the sex workers, including the client, because there's no research that's been done on the client, to say, can we therefore, let's go into parliament. But we're still lobbying for more ministers, and I know DSD is on board, social development is on board, child is on board also. But we need justice to come on board and be at the party.
Well, that's real food for thought tonight. A lot of things that perhaps we need to digest. Perhaps it isn't always easy to listen to, but it's something we still need to discuss. That was Katlego Rasebetse from Sisonke. Thank you for joining us tonight, Katlego.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back right after this ad break.
Law Focus. Point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus. If you've just joined us, it's 32 minutes past 7. And we're talking about the decriminalization of sex work. Remember what Law Focus is about. We talk about legal issues and we bring the law right to your ears and perhaps to your hearts. Every week we go into in-depth topics about the law, its implications for you, and with the help of interesting case studies perhaps, and with insightful guests. Now, according to Human Rights Watch, most sex workers in South Africa are poor, black, and female. And they sell sex primarily to support their children as well as other dependents. Now, the report was based on research which was conducted between May and June 2018, and it was conducted in four provinces of South Africa. Now, the report documents how the criminalization of sex work seems to fuel certain human rights violations, and it undermines the sex workers' rights to health, which is a human right and a fundamental right for all of us. The report also provided some recommendations to reform the legal system, thereby providing some sort of protection for sex workers. Now, we want to get a legal opinion on this by talking to Mutebang Mukwena from Legal Aid, and he's a regional court legal practitioner at the law firm's Vereniging office. Good evening, Mutebang. Good evening, welcome to Law Focus.
Good evening,
Paul,
and your listeners.
Yeah. It's amazing. I sometimes fluff the easiest of names. I'm sorry if I did. But welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Now, according to the South African legal system, sex work is still, strictly speaking, illegal. Its enforcement, perhaps, I don't know, is questionable, but strictly speaking on the books, it's illegal. Why is it still illegal?
Well, let me say, example, let me give you the background. Maybe you can understand clearly at this point in time of our life, it is regarded being illegal. Mm. Well, our South African legal system, we say legally it is a hybrid system. It means it is composed of quite a number of components. Let me say the first component would be the Western component, which is divided into two, being the Roman law and the Roman Dutch law.
Mm.
Those two have filtered through the years, and it came through to South Africa via Jan van Riebeck, and it mingled with our customary practices and law, and finally with the universal law, which is the human rights. Now, the question of illegality comes from the component of Roman law. Roman law, they practice law to an extent, and their practices were frowning against immoral activities there. And sex workers or prostitution then has been found throughout the years. And when it came to South Africa, well, hoping that we are mostly a Christian-based society, we adopted that prostitution is an immoral act. Therefore, even the lawmakers of our times have seen that this to be an immoral activity. Therefore, it cannot be legal at any point in time for now.
Mm, mm.
That is why the law as it stands, particularly, I would refer you to the Refn Act within the Sexual Offence Act 32 of 2007, under Part 3, Section 11 of it. It says that engaging in sexual service for reward, it's a crime.
Mm.
That is why the law at this point in time standing like that. And then nothing is possible, impossible going forward.
Right. So, given that we have a long history, it seems, in this country of criminalizing sex work, the fact that this country is predominantly or views itself in sort of a Christian light, although maybe hybrid with some African beliefs, and the conservative outlook of our citizenry with regard to morality, which I would say they're quite conservative, do you think sex work can legitimately be decriminalized in this country without there being issues?
Well, let me say, Sepo, nothing is impossible in this world. And what I know for sure is that law changes. Every now and then, some other provisions get repealed and new legislation got enacted very soon or at any time when the time is ready. Now, let me give you an example of one of the things that happened in the past that was illegal or was criminal, an activity. Cannabis. Do you still remember cannabis happened to be one of those things that would be regarded as a crime to possess it, even to use it?
Yes.
But lately now, it has been decriminalized.
Hmm.
So it shows that the law changes. It depends at the time when people think positively to a certain concept and they agree as a whole to make it legal. So illegal to being now legal. It is just a matter of time, probably even with sex workers, with time things might work properly. More so, if I have to say to you, it happened to be illegal because of the conservative mentality of morality.
Mm.
Now, you can see, lately, even the church itself, the church is struggling with morals itself.
Yes.
And many people throughout the country, throughout the world, happen to lack their morals to, I'm not sure to call it what, but with time, I can tell you if lawmakers of the time happen to understand the language better, how people react in the recent times, then it is possible that sex workers can be legalized or decriminalized.
Mm. That's an interesting take, because perhaps, yeah, I mean, 50 years ago it would have been illegal to marry someone of a different race. It would have been unthinkable. No one would have thought, inside this country anyway. And now, well, it isn't such a big deal anymore. So perhaps, like the song goes, perhaps, but we will see. And now there's also been an increased, or the reports of increased violations against sex workers. Now, does the law come to the aid of a sex worker? Ultimately, the victim of a crime is the victim of a crime, regardless of whether you approve of how they live, how they make a living, and what they do with their own bodies or whatever. A victim of a crime is a victim of a crime. Is there that beginning to be that realization within law enforcement, the courts, etc., that the mere fact that someone is a sex worker, that doesn't mean that they can't be the victim, for instance, of a sexual violation?
So let me say, yes, the law is there for all of us. We are all equal before the law, and we deserve human dignity and human rights. However, if specifically what we'll be talking about a sex worker under the law. Mind you, the law for now still maintains sex work being a crime.
Yes.
If a victim of sexual offense is going to report the matter, surely one has to be taken into consideration, one has to be assisted like everybody else.
Yeah.
Specifically, like I say, under sex work, it's a problematic. Even the police, I think, law enforcement agencies are aware that prostitution is a crime. Now, if a victim is going to attend to a police station and specifically say that I was engaging in a service for a reward of sexual nature, then the police might not take that particular person seriously because they will be taking notes. Now, that's where the challenge is.
Right.
That's where the challenge is for now. But then, like anybody else, they're entitled to human rights, to all the rights that are enshrined in the Constitution that everybody enjoys. But then under specific sex work, it might be a challenge as the law stands.
Yeah, sure. Well, you can imagine, you are a poor single mother who does this for a living. You're violated by somebody. You then go to the police station, and it's a difficult choice to even say that you're going to go to the police station because you don't know what the reaction might be when you get there, because you yourself are engaging in quote-unquote illegal activities. This is what we're discussing tonight, sex work and its implications. The stories, we're not just talking about theories. It happens every day on the street corners of our city, all across the country, all across the world. And behind those stories are people, real men and real women, who are making a living. If you've just joined us, we're talking about sex work and its implications. And we are now engaged with an attorney from Legal Aid in Vereniging, who's unpacking some of the implications for us. Now, what are some of the processes needed to legalize or at the very least decriminalize sex work?
Yeah, well, let me say, in matters like this one, communities of interest to the very same topic, they have to be vocal as much as possible. They've got to lobby around the topic. Most of the sex workers mainly are women, and to be corrected on this one. And women are in numbers more than men. I think if they keep on lobbying, keep on promoting their rights, and also convincing the lawmakers to that extent to say maybe part of it of the gender-based violence it is promoted by the very same sex work not being legalized or not decriminalized, because the victims at the end of the day, they are afraid even to go to the police station to open up the case. But then the voices of women need to be heard, and I think if the very same woman can engage the services of maybe health specialists to promote and advance their case in terms of health, in terms of because most members of the community access the very same kind of work along the lines of health and I think so. They forget about whether money is there, but then they think about health and also the moral part of it.
Do you think it would be as simple as simply repealing those parts of our laws which make it illegal to engage in sex work, or as I view it, that perhaps there needs to be a shift in the psyche of the South African public to not stigmatize it the way that they do now?
Sepo, let me say, look, the people who do or make the laws, they are just like you and me at the end of the day. Yeah. And if me and you are to sit down and create such a piece of law, maybe we would need so much input from different people and show us sense and reason. And surely, at the end of the day, if you are convinced with that, we can enact. We can enact a better law that will serve many a people. Now, it is not difficult now, please begin. But let's say a body of lawmakers for now, they have not yet reached a group of people who would make sense. Let us go back to that case of cannabis.
Yes.
Cannabis, it was only maybe in the early days supported by the Rastafarians. But once the medical fraternity jumped into the ship about the benefits of marijuana, then it made sense to the lawmakers, and finally it was decriminalized. Maybe also in this case, I think the input of health fraternity in terms of, you know, of health, let alone the stigma. But then once it being decriminalized, stigma will fall in time.
I mean, the other element to it, I think you've mentioned it, and it's a very important element to it, is access to health. That if somebody doesn't feel that they've done anything wrong because all they're doing is making a living, it's much easier for them to go and seek assistance health-wise should they need to do so, rather than, you know, if they have to go to the doctor and explain that actually I'm a sex worker and I picked up something during my work. If that's an illegal activity, it might come with some sense of shame.
And you see, simple, the most challenging part of the whole concept, it is that it is sex. It is just simple sex. Let me put it that way. Because I'm saying simple sex because people do sex naturally. So it's God-given desire at one point in time or often. But for the mere concept, it is done for a reward. A reward is a problem. If it's being done for no reward, it is not a problem. So for now, the question is the money.
That is a transaction. That's the problem. That is a financial transaction.
Exactly. Now, if we think deeper, it would mean that the question of poverty maybe promoted some other people to be engaged in such activity. But like I say, it is just a question of people who make the laws. At the right time, it will be given that, okay, you can just do it, but then we will regulate, probably so. But then for now, majority of people are still embedded in the Christianity morality. Therefore, it sounds much challenging for them to concede to that. Just like an abortion. So, going forward, anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Yeah, we do, especially in this country. Anything is possible in this country. Well, finally, perhaps it is one of the more sincere arguments, and not moralizing ones, against the legalization of sex work would be that it isn't work which anybody chooses to do. They find themselves in that situation because of circumstances, and very few sex workers are in sex work simply voluntarily. Their circumstances, and sometimes even they are forced through to human trafficking, etc. One of the concerns would be that should sex work be decriminalized, it may encourage others to join it as well. What do you say to that?
Well, I don't want to give my opinion. I'm a lawyer.
Yes.
I'm just practicing the law. I'm waiting for those who draft the law to draft it. My duty is to implement it.
Oh, well, okay. Well, put differently then. Well, what would your ideal, if you could sit across the street from the Minister of Justice, etc., and tell them on this topic, this is my advice to you. What would you say to them?
They're putting me on a gun. I'm representing a legal aid here.
Yes.
And I would not give my view on a paper directly to say this is my view under the space that I'm talking under now.
I can perfectly respect that.
Generally, I could say let the voice of those who support this keep on. Finally, someone would hear it.
Mm.
Someone would have a change of mind.
Mm.
And surely, it could be. It is possible. It is not something that we can go in up to the third generation going forward.
Mm.
But it is not sorted out. It's just a question of time.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you. I know I put you a bit on the spot there, but I appreciate that your answer there. That's an honest answer that you've given. Thank you, Mr. Mukwena, for joining us. Your views have been very insightful, and I appreciate the discussion that we've had.
You're welcome.
Now, we've come to the end of yet another interesting hour, 1 hour journey of Law Focus, and we were focusing on sex work and the decriminalization of sex work. As a country, we need to ask ourselves perhaps some of the more difficult questions, and that's why we have these topics on this particular show. It's always topics that require introspection. We're dealing with human beings who are there to make a living. The way in which they make the living has been in existence for millennia. After my bones and yours have turned to dust, it will still be there. So it's clear that decriminalization, whether you like it or not, is not going to stop sex work. So what do we do? I'm not here to tell you whether you should or shouldn't decriminalize sex work. I'm asking you what benefit there is to the criminalization of sex work. Well, it's one of those topics that it's for each of us to decide and to make a decision to go forward based on those decisions. I hope the decision you make is one of compassion and that you will be able to look at the other person and see them for what they are. It's now 8:05. Thank you for joining us tonight on Vow FM 88.1. You've been listening to Law Focus. We'd like to thank our guests. And that was Katlego Rasibete from Sisonke and Motebang Mukwena from Legal Aid. We appreciate their insightful and quite informative input. It isn't always easy to put yourself out there on a topic which can have such high emotions. Now, thank you to our producer, Refile Mekwa, and our technical producer, Kutwane Serame, and thank you for putting the show together for all of us. From me, thank you and good night. It's a pleasure, as always, being with you on a Tuesday night. I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you for tuning in. We'll meet again same time, same place next week. Good night.
Law Focus. Point of information. Law Focus Podcast.